You're listening to the ESO Network, your station for all things geek.
Everyone these days could use a little support, and your friends at the ESO Network are no different. With the ESO Network Patreon, the cool thing is when you help support us, it's you who will benefit. With four tiers starting for as little as 25 cents a week, you can listen to some of your favorite network podcasts early, hear exclusive content, maybe get some ESO swag, or even possibly take a shot at the geek seat. All you need to do is sign up at patreon.com/ESO Network.
I'm Drew Leiter.
And I'm Cletus Jacobs.
And welcome to episode 220 of the Earth Station DCU. Tonight we're going to talk Wonder Woman 84, and we got some guests joining us. First, let's welcome back Angela Pritchett.
Hi, everybody. Yeah. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, I'm very excited about talking Wonder Woman.
Me too.
All right, and joining us from the Mother Station, we got Mike Gordon.
Howdy, and happy holidays.
Happy holidays, sir. And it was exciting holidays with Wonder Woman coming out.
Absolutely. That made it even more wonderful.
I got your pun there. And lastly, joining us all the way from Chicken Town, we've got Kevin Eldridge.
Hey, Drew, Cletus, Mike, Angela, great to be here with all of you again. It's been a while, I think, since I was up here on Earth Station DCU, like over a year, so great to be back.
Yeah, it has been quite a while. All right. I don't know about you guys, but I'm excited about talking Wonder Woman.
We got spoilers.
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 We got spoilers.
Spoilers.
For you. We got spoilers.
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 We've got spoilers.
Spoilers.
For you. For you.
I was very excited, what was it, a few months back when they announced that Wonder Woman was coming out on HBO. I don't even think it was a couple months. It's probably about a month, wasn't it? They said announced that Wonder Woman was coming out on HBO Max and theaters at the same time. So I was very looking forward to that.
It was a Christmas miracle.
It's a nice way to end a bad year.
Yeah.
Definitely agree with that.
One of the things I liked about the Wonder Woman movie was I loved the opening sequence on Themyscira with Diana joining the games. I loved the Colosseum feel we had there on Themyscira, and I liked watching Diana compete against the older women. And I thought it was great to have the opening sequence doing that.
I really enjoyed the scene as well. Honestly, it was probably one of my favorite sequences in the movie. In the grand picture, thinking of the movie as a whole, though, I wish they had done a better job trying to tie in the opening sequence to the rest of the film, because I think that there are some connections that they tried to make, but I thought that they were a little too subtle. And it's one of those things, like, as I'm watching that scene, I really liked it. And then after the movie was over, I was like, wow, that really had almost nothing to do with the rest of the movie. I know it establishes like the older Amazonian hero. It kind of hints on the, like, you need to earn your victories again. But I thought that was a really, like, I thought that connection was there, but it was kind of a little more subtle than I would have expected. And I would have liked either us to have gone back a couple more times and, like, had multiple flashbacks, or to there have been a stronger connection to the rest of the movie, because to me personally, it felt like kind of running back the greatest hits of the first movie without any real benefit to the plot of the film.
Yeah, I would completely agree with that, Cletus. It seems it's like, we better have a Themyscira scene because people want to see Themyscira. We all loved it in the first movie, and so we better have this thing. And yeah, there's little to no connection to the whole rest of the movie. It's just, it's beautiful. We want to see it, and so here it is. And that's, you know, that's really the only purpose it served, was we would miss it otherwise. So yeah, I think you're right. They probably would have helped from a story structure perspective to have some more direct ties. You know, maybe Diana could have gone back to Themyscira to get the armor for that scene towards the end, something like that, as opposed to just, that's it. It's the opening scene. You know, I just watched Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade this week, coincidentally, and I was reminded of how we got that River Phoenix, you know, opening scene, which had a little bit more connection to the rest of the movie than this one did. But it's just, it was fun. It was beautiful. It was one of the best parts of the movie. Just, it was like its own separate little short film.
Now, in the movies, is it a rule that Wonder Woman couldn't go back to Themyscira?
They did say that. So my girlfriend and I actually rewatched the first one on Christmas Eve just to like kind of refresh and get ready for this film. And it's not focused on it all. It's almost a throwaway line, but Hippolyta does say at one point, you know, you can't come back if you leave. Mm. And then they never reference it again. So like, if you don't catch that line, the movie does not focus on it, but it is said.
That's what I thought.
But they don't also focus on, go ahead. Sorry.
Oh, I mean, they also established that the armor was not in Themyscira when she had the battle with the other, like the men.
Yeah,
that
true.
It was lost to the world after that. No one knew what really would happen to it. She had to hunt it down.
Yeah. I guess I used a really bad example for how they could have tied it back in. Somehow, there could have been some way to connect Themyscira a little bit more to the rest of the movie.
I kind of disagree with you guys here. I thought they did a good job of explaining who she was and showing the armor at the beginning, and then in the middle showing that Diana had found it after looking for it, and then at the end we see her, like, I don't want to, like, you know, we see her as Asteria at the end, kind of giving us that beginning, middle, and ending of that one character, and we don't really know what happened to her, because at the beginning they think she's dead. So I don't know. That's what I picked on, but also it could have, they could have punched us in the face with it a little bit more, but they did kind of give it to us through, like, you know, three parts in the movie.
The only point that I would raise, I think you raised a good point there. The only thing that I would argue is that would to me suggest then that character was supposed to be the point of the movie. And if that's the case, they did not do a good job communicating that. Because I see the arc that you're talking about, but in my opinion, it was tertiary at best to the plot, that this character and her armor. I struggle to think that Wonder Woman really needed the armor in the last scene. It's fine. I'm glad that she wore it. It was really cool looking. But if they wanted that, if that arc was meant to be more crucial to the plot, then that they needed to have focused on that way more than they did.
Well, I do agree with you guys that it could have been better handled. I did see how it integrated. I mean, the whole thing in the beginning is Diana learning a lesson about how she shouldn't, you know, that if it comes from a lie, then it's not worth having. And that's her whole thing with Steve in this movie, is that she can't get past it. She really wants Steve back, but it's a lie. And she can't get past that. And she's got that shows that she's got a history of doing that, because she did that as a kid. And then later on, she tells Max Lord the same thing before he finally kind of that big confrontation. She says to him, like, you know, you can't live on a lie or something like that, to that effect. Now, it could have been stronger and it could have been better implemented, but I do see what they were going for there.
Yeah.
Well, and they also have her talk about the lasso, too, and how's the lasso of truth.
And one of the points that Queen Hippolyta made in that opening sequence, when she told Diana, no true hero is born from lies. And I think that's was kind of supposed to be the theme of the movie.
Yes, I think so, too. Because the whole thing about the wishing stone came from the god of lies.
Now, after the opening scene in Themyscira, we see that the movie moves to the year 1984. We see Wonder Woman is protected in innocence from the shadows. We get to see a mall heist, basically. A group of men are trying to steal artifacts from a black market dealer. And we see Wonder Woman. We see the group of men trying to steal the artifacts from the black market dealer. And we get to see Wonder Woman in action. And one of the things we see is that she takes off her tiara and throws it and takes out the cameras. She's trying not to get captured on camera. And we know from the news reports that she's trying to stay in the shadows without revealing who she is. And I think they did a good job of kind of showing that. And that, besides the opening Themyscira scene, this was my other favorite part of the movie, was her at the beginning, you know, taking down the guys in the mall. And also what she was doing out on the street, saving somebody from getting run over, if I remember right. And I thought that was pretty cool. And I didn't know we'd be seeing Wonder Woman swinging around like Spider-Man either.
I liked this scene also, but I thought it was the movie making the best of a problem that Zack Snyder handed them. You can see both this film and the previous Wonder Woman film have really strained against the idea that Batman vs. Superman put forth, which is that Wonder Woman essentially went underground. Like, she comes out for World War One, and again, this is the BVS version that we get, is she goes out for World War One and then just goes away for 80 years. And you can tell Patty Jenkins does not like that idea. Is straining against that as much as she can. Like, you know what I mean? Like, that tiara scene was really cool, seeing her throw the tiara, but they had to throw that in there because they had to be like, well, we want her to be Wonder Woman, but this dumb decision that was made 2 movies ago, we have to try and keep in line with it plot-wise, so she's got to take out the camera. You know what I'm saying? Like, I thought the movie was doing the best it could to work around a problem that it didn't create.
Yeah, absolutely. It's their hands are tied because of the history that's been established of no one knows that Wonder Woman exists. Well, how do you make a superhero movie with a superhero running around in crowd scenes and in a mall, and yet 40 years later, no one knows that she existed? How does that work? So, yeah, it doesn't quite add up. And obviously, 1984 is very different from today, where if she pops up in a mall, 800 people would have their iPhones out and pointed straight at her, you know, whereas we were not all carrying cameras and recording devices everywhere we went back then. But that said, an awful lot of people saw Wonder Woman over the course of this movie, and there were news reports about her, about rumors at least of a woman stopping the robbers and whatnot. But yeah, it doesn't quite hold up as a one, you know, perfect history of the character, given the constraints of how do you do this.
Which is really odd, considering, especially lately, Patty Jenkins has come on verbally and been really supportive of Snyder, and particularly the Snyder Cut project. So I guess that she was in on all those discussions. My understanding was that she and Zach worked very closely as to what she could and could not do with the Wonder Woman franchise, part of the franchise. But yet that said, yeah, that's one thing I did kind of wonder, you know, why is this set in the 80s? I mean, there's some stuff in here that definitely felt 80s, and I appreciated some things, but I don't know exactly why it had to be in the 80s. Why couldn't it be now?
Yeah, it didn't really have to be in the 80s. And you know me, I am Mr. 80s, you know.
I know.
Can you tell me?
If Kevin's saying that, oh goodness.
the new Wonder Woman movie is going to be set in 1984, you know, that's quite a treat to dangle in front of, you know, someone like me. I love Wonder Woman, I love DC, I love the 80s. Here we go. But I had that same thought. Why is this in the 80s? And you get those little visual treats and a few, you know, 80s things here and there. Here's the break dancers. Here's Steve Trevor doing his little fashion show, trying on Miami Vice suits and whatnot. And you know, fine, the mall, the leg warmers, all that stuff. Okay. But you don't get a lot of that. It's not like choking in 80s stuff either. It's not Stranger Things. It's not The Wedding Singer. You know, like it's not really about the 80s. It happens to be set in the 80s, and the Cold War, you know, Reagan era Russia storyline stuff plays into it a little bit, but it doesn't really have to. That's some easy story tweaks, and even that stuff doesn't have to apply. So yeah, it just, the whole thing comes across as a little odd to set it there, especially given the fact that it's so difficult to tell this story about someone who no one is supposed to know exists.
How different were planes from Steve's era? Because if you threw him in a jet now, he wouldn't have been able to fly with a computerized system.
Yeah, we had that same thought. My wife and I went, I was like, no matter how great a pilot he is, can you pluck a guy out of World War One and stick him in a 1980s military jet fighter? And he looks around at the equipment for 4 seconds and then, okay, off we go.
Yeah, that... I mean, I'm even thinking if they had said it today, he would have looked at it and been like, what the crap is this?
Yeah,
What's a computer?
I didn't even buy how quickly he got the hang of the 80s version of a jet, Angela. Yeah, absolutely. I felt like the jet turning invisible was more realistic than Steve Trevor knowing how to fly the jet.
And then knowing how to get to Cairo and having enough jet fuel to get to Cairo.
Yes.
All that whole sequence, I think most of the plot holes in the film for me are all centered around that jet sequence, where it's just like, it's unbelievable all this stuff that they threw in so they could have an invisible jet. All of these plot holes are just right there. Like, don't get me wrong. Like, some of the scene, like the fireworks thing is visually really entertaining.
Yeah.
But I'm not a plane guy, but there's no way flying through fireworks is a good idea, right? Like, well, am
yeah,
I crazy?
Even that, like within 8 seconds, they would have been way farther away and way higher in the sky than those fireworks. But I get that they wanted the visual. You want the beautiful visual of here's Steve and Diana surrounded by fireworks. So, okay, I'll give them that. I liked the invisibility thing. I thought that was a cute way to work in having an invisible jet for Wonder Woman without it being, oh yeah, I'm Wonder Woman and thus I own an invisible jet, because that was always kind of ridiculous. So I liked that they worked it in. But yeah, I had the same thought.
I just want to know if she finds her mug. Does she find her coffee cup? That's what I want to know. Like, that's the important thing I want to know from that scene. Does she find it? Does she step on it? What?
In the Marvel universe, that would come into play later on. You know, at some point.
I know. I was hoping for another after credit scene.
Yes. The invisible coffee mug should come into play at some point. Six movies from now, they're going to get around to explaining the cup.
She's going to accidentally knock it off in her apartment.
I want to just circle real quick back to the 80s thing. And this was another thing, much like, in my opinion, with the opening sequence. I thought that the movie being set in the 80s, I think there's a reason for it. But again, I think it's too subtle. I feel like they didn't. I know sometimes I argue for more subtle storytelling, but I thought, again, it was too subtle, where a lot of the story is about excess, right? Like always wanting more, more, more. And the 80s, I think, are the perfect decade for a story like that, but they don't focus on it enough. And I think that's like, yes, the main villain is wanting more and more, but they're not doing enough to draw your attention to the connection to that, to the 80s. We're not seeing enough of other people doing that in the 80s, just normal, not affected by Max Lord, just in their own lifestyle. You know what I mean? I thought that connection's there, but again, it's too subtle, and the movie just kind of expects you to be like, oh, okay, I kind of get it.
Yeah, it was the yuppie era and the, you know, Wall Street, Gordon Gekko. I think you can directly connect to the way they played Max Lord also. So yeah, it was there, but not so much that it's comes across like a major theme of the movie to justify having it in the 80s. You're right.
Now, since we're talking about Max Lord, I'm curious what you guys thought about his character in this, because I didn't really care for the version of him where he basically became that artifact instead of having the normal powers we're used to having, where he influenced people. What was you guys' opinion on how he's portrayed in this movie?
I think he is a really interesting blend of both versions of Max Lord, if that makes sense. I think they gave us the 80s and the 90s version of Max Lord, who was part of the JLA and was kind of that sleazy businessman, right? And then you get the other, not obviously exactly the same, but then you get the criminal mastermind of the modern comics era. And yes, he doesn't have mind control like he has in the comics, but he kind of does, right? He's not literally controlling their mind, but we see him effectively controlling people as if he had that. And so to me, you're right, Drew. He's not like a version that we've seen before, but I thought it was an interesting mix of both versions of Max Lord. And especially if you're going to set it in the 80s, it makes sense, I think, to reference back to that older version of Max Lord.
I guess that's true.
Yeah, I mean, I've never been a huge, and I don't even consider Max Lord really a Wonder Woman villain. I mean, I know that, you know, because of the events of Identity Crisis, he kind of is connected to her. He'll always be connected to her because she kills him then, right? In the Countdown to Infinite Crisis or whatever. And that was a big bone of contention for a lot of comic fans, and that was a lot of very, very controversial. So they got a history there that way. So I see where he's become a Wonder Woman villain, but I don't particularly like. It wouldn't be my first pick. When I heard that he was the bad guy in this, I was kind of like, oh, okay. Well, I hope he's, you know, impressive, and I guess he was as good as I thought he could be, because I just don't think he's a great character in and of himself. I mean, Pedro Pascal, I think, did a good job. He played that sort of 80s, you know, guy that you see, the characters that you see on, we'd see on the 80s on the TV shows, I mean, the commercials, and they'd be like, you know, just make a call, and there was all the Ponzi schemes and all that stuff going on back then. So he definitely fed off that, and I could see where that character was coming from, and almost a, you know, an 80s version of Trump as well. But I think the problem for me with the character in the movie is that once he decides to become the stone, I didn't understand how his powers worked. Like, he was able to grant wishes, but then he took something, and I wasn't sure, like, how he knew what to take, or whether it was his choice on what he could take, or, because I imagine the stone just automatically took whatever, you know, what meant the most to you. Whereas he seemed to have a choice as to what he could pick, as well as it seemed like, you know, you couldn't, I think at one point someone says you can't make a wish twice. And then later on, someone makes a second wish. And so I didn't really understand the rules of the stone. And furthermore, it just complicated things when he was turned into the stone. So I thought that was just kind of sloppily done.
I have to agree with you on that, Mike, because towards the end of the movie, there were so many people. And the other thing I was confused about, I thought he had to be touching them. So when he got on television or whatever that broadcasting thing was, he was able to grant people's wishes and then take things from them, but he wasn't in physical contact with them, which we saw earlier in the movie.
Well, so I was. They made that weird. They made that weird connection with, like, the atoms.
It made no sense.
The broadcasts were touching them, and so therefore he was touching them. It was dumb, but they tried to be like, in a way, he's touching all these people through science.
Yeah, it was like he got into a semantics argument over whether or not this will work as Reagan or whoever the president was explaining it to him. He was like, okay, so it touches them, right? It's going to touch them, right? Okay, so this will work? Okay, which, I mean, it's a magic, cursed magic thing from an evil god. So whatever, you know, whatever the rules are, whatever you want the rules to be, that's what they are.
Seemed like there were really no rules.
Yeah.
after he became the artifact, it didn't really seem like there were any rules.
Yeah, but that said, then that does make it tricky for the viewers, because we spend the whole movie trying to figure out, okay, so what can he do now? What's he doing? How does this work? Can he do that again? You know, like, you're kind of, the answer is, it's whatever whatever he's supposed to be able to do at this point in the movie is what he can do now. But it's not clear. And so, yeah, it was a little tricky trying to follow the logic or lack thereof of the Dreamstone.
Right, because he's got this stone that can grant you any wish that you want, and he wishes to be the stone. And you're kind of like, why would you do that?
Why don't you just do what the genie said, you wish for more wishes?
Exactly. Like, it just seemed like now you're going to be spending your time, like, you know, you have to get people to wish for you. And I guess that was a workaround. He could have people wish for him, and then he would get what he wanted that way. But yeah, it just seemed really confusing.
Would it be maybe that he only gets one wish if he's just wishing, you know, with the stone, whereas by becoming the wish, that's the workaround. So now he can just keep siphoning wishes off of other people, I guess.
that but what stops him from wishing for infinite stones?
I noticed he became very good at manipulating people into wishing what he wanted them to.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And I was watching the movie with Michelle, and she brought up an interesting point. She was like, what was wrong with him physically? And I'm like, what do you mean? She's like, well, he was sick. Like, he was always taking vitamins and stuff before he became the stone. And then after he became the stone, he was getting real ill and everything. And she's like, what? She said that I don't think they really explained, like, what was physically wrong with him. And I'm like, yeah, they didn't.
I thought, well, what I thought was after he became the stone, every time somebody made a wish, it seemed to affect him physically. And yeah, as he progressed through the movie, he was getting worse and worse until he started, when he was hooked up to that communication thing, he started healing himself somehow.
Well, he did make the comment that he would wish for more organs, or he would wish to fix his organs or whatever, as they, like, the stone wishes messed him up. He didn't make that comment. So I think as people were making wishes, he was losing a, like, his humanity or a bit of himself from those wishes. Like, it was, he wished to be the stone. It was taking away stuff from him and making him the stone. I don't know, but that's kind of how I took it, because he did make the comment that he would just wish for more organs or something. And he started to get healthier as more people were making wishes.
Well, but Mike raises a good point in that they reference that he's taking some sort of medication prior to becoming the stone.
Right.
And they never, like you said, Mike, they never get into what that was. I initially, when he first dropped that line, I assumed that they were going to be getting into the typical Max Lord, which was the mind control stuff, and that maybe that was something latent that was starting to emerge, and that he was taking medication to suppress migraines or something like that. Again, this was all speculation on my part at the beginning of the film. And then that, like you said, that never materialized. And I was like, part of me wonders if that was maybe something from an older version of the story that just kind of stuck in there, that initial vitamin thing.
An extended scene we might see on a DVD cut. or he's just from the 80s, and that's when multivitamins got super popular. And that's what I thought was going on, that he was just one of those, like, trendy 80s guys that had to take his vitamins.
That's possible, too. But again, I think that's something where you maybe need to give further explanation for that.
Yeah.
So are we saying, and Angela, are you putting it out there that there's holes left purposefully open by Patty Jenkins so that she can do a Jenkins cut later and make it a big miniseries on HBO Max?
No, I just think the editors didn't edit it tight enough, but that's my opinion. I feel like there's stuff that could have been left out, but there is stuff that they didn't put in that also would have explained stuff for us that they probably did film, because that's how all movie magic works. They always film too much and then edit it down. But so I kind of think maybe we will get a Patty Jenkins cut streaming next Christmas on HBO Max. Right after Wonder Woman 1985.
We are the Air Station One podcast, and we approve this message.
Hey, I'm Judy, and I've been a listener of Earth Station One for over 10 years. Yeah, every day while Mike edited together over 550 episodes, you know all that geek-themed blah, blah, blah. I've listened so much that now I hear howdy in my sleep. You too can enjoy all the Earth Station One fun wherever fine podcasts are found. Okay, Mike, I did this for you. Are we going to get another dog now?
The Earth Station One podcast, over 10 years for geeks by geeks.
One of the big things we see in this movie is Diana and Barbara Minerva's relationship. And I thought that was kind of interesting how their take on their character. Because I really liked the Diana-Barbara relationship, but I thought it was a weird turn for her when she wanted to become the apex predator and become Cheetah. I didn't like how they did that. I thought they should have done that differently.
I feel like they should have given Barbara so much more screen time than they did Max Lord. Oh my goodness. Yeah. I loved her interactions with Diana so much compared to Cheesy 80s, man.
Yeah, and I mean, she was honestly the more compelling villain, and it really makes you. I can see what they were thinking with. I can see story-wise what they were thinking, making her, in a sense, the secondary villain, in that she's just supporting what the main guy's doing. But I don't agree with that choice. I think you could have found a way to, if you want this wishstone or whatever to be the center of the movie, that's fine. But I think you could do that with it just being Diana and Barbara. I don't know that you needed Max Lord in there. I think you could have had a probably more focused film with that too.
Yeah, and I think one of the things they should have done was made her becoming Cheetah a side effect from her wish, instead of her, because it's almost like she got two wishes. I don't know, it was strange.
Yeah, oh, she did. She definitely
Well, she
did get two
did.
Yeah,
wishes,
she did.
which I guess the first wish was
The first wish was on the
the stone
stone.
itself. And
Right,
so
and the
then,
second one was with Max,
yeah,
so.
so that's why she's allowed to get a second wish, I guess, because that's how
Sure.
the magic world of magic wishes works. So,
But he was also saying he was being generous.
right. I mean,
But.
Kristen Wiig is great. You know, I love Kristen Wiig. Been a huge fan of hers since her SNL days. And one of her strengths is, and even a lot of her characters back on SNL were the kind of nervously speaking quickly as she did, especially early in the movie. She's great at that. And so she fell right into playing that character really well. It was a little supervillain origin story tropish, as far as we've seen so many of these movies where it's like a sad sack, you know, nerdy, down on your luck type at first before the turn into the all-powerful supervillain. And we kind of got that again with Barbara. The whole arc of the character, though, was unusual in that it took so long to get to Cheetah, to an actual cat lady. That's like the last few minutes of her whole story arc. So it was a little unusual in some ways as far as the structure of what she went through, but in other ways, it seemed very much in line with how these movies tend to work.
But
I said.
out of all the characters, she's the one that we actually saw lose something with the stone. Like you see her, you know, she's handing the homeless guy food. You see that she's a good person. And then throughout the movie, you see that she's losing that goodness and becoming, you know, Cheetah. So out of everyone that made wishes, like out of the main cast, she's the one that actually showed like what they said that the wish stone would do, in my opinion.
Oh yeah. And with Diana, of course, as well, because they showed Diana was, losing her power over the course of the
Oh
movie,
yeah.
but by Steve being alive, of course.
And that's a good point that you raised in how kind of cliched the villain origin thing has become. And I was actually talking to my girlfriend after the movie that it's kind of frustrating as a comic book fan. It's frustrating me sometimes that we as comic book fans watch these movies and we see a character like Cheetah and we know who Cheetah is. And it feels like with a lot of these, not just this movie, but a lot of these comic book movies, we spend an hour and 40 minutes waiting to finally get the character that we know. And then if it's the villain, we only get 20 minutes of them actually being the villain. And then you never see him again. And that gets frustrating after a while. It's like, ah, but I like Cheetah. Give me more of that. And then I thought in this particular case, I thought that they killed her, first off. And then when she inexplicably just was fine after they came out of the water, I was like, oh. Okay, I mean, I like that, but that doesn't make sense.
Oh, it was
And that I
disturbing
was.
how Di when Diana was holding her underwater, it looked like she was just drowning her, you know?
I
So
thought she
until
murdered her. I thought that was a straight up murder, and
that's
then
what it
she was
looked like
just
until
fine.
she, she, pulls her up out of the water, and then you see her kind of flopping around on land, like, okay, she's not dead. That's nice.
But then they left it. I was hoping for more of an indicator if we would see that character again. I know they give us the one scene where she's Barbara again, looking at the sunrise. And so she's not dead, but I personally would really like to see her again. And I would have liked some more indication that we didn't just get like 5 minutes of actual cheetah footage. And
Yeah.
that's it. That's
I
all we get.
completely agree with you on that. Like, Cheetah's the one villain when you think of Wonder Woman. That's like one of her nemesis. Like, you know, Hades, her. Those are who you think of when you think of Wonder Woman. And we saw her for like 5 minutes as Cheetah. And that's like it. And it was
Yeah,
like, wait, what? Wait, what?
Diana doesn't have a.
That's
she doesn't have a rich back catalog of villains to choose from. There are not a lot of classic Wonder Woman villains, really. So this is the big one. So yeah, it'd be nice to get a little more of her, and maybe we will.
And when they announced Max Lord as the villain, I was like, what? This is Wonder Woman. We should be getting like Cheetah or someone like that in there. And then they showed Cheetah in the commercials later on. I was like, yes. Okay, they were just hiding her. No, they hid her for most of the movie. So I was just a little sad.
Yeah.
It's funny because Cletus and I have been reviewing Wonder Woman. They brought Maxwell Lord back in her regular comic series recently. I'm sure that's because of the movie.
Well, and I think it's also to the point that we're making in that Wonder Woman has a general lack of a rogues gallery, and I think DC is essentially trying to help Maxwell, like use Maxwell Lord to help fill that void a little more so that it's not just Ares and Cheetah. I mean, I think it's going to take a long time to get to that point where people think of him as a Wonder Woman villain, but I do think that they're trying to make that effort. But one thing that, Drew, you and I also talked a lot about in our podcast leading up to this movie was the hope that if we knew Cheetah was going to be, you know, one of two villains. And so our hope was that this movie was going to more just kind of set her up, much like Aquaman did with Black Manta,
right,
so that they could focus on her more in another film. And it's possible that this movie did that. But again, like, I thought Aquaman, for example, made it very clear that we will see Black Manta in a much bigger spotlight in the future. Whether it happens or not, that's one thing. But the movie made it really clear. This one, I thought, left it ambiguous at best. At best, it's ambiguous whether we'll see Cheetah again or not. And I thought, like I said, I like the character. I thought the design of Cheetah looked pretty good. I like Kristen Wiig playing the character a lot. So I'm hopeful that she comes back, because otherwise that's just a huge waste.
I agree with you.
They've got to, because if you look at the Wonder Woman villains, they can't actually use some of them in modern times.
They're not going to use Egg Foo in Wonder Woman.
Oh my gosh, that's what I was thinking too. That was exactly who I was thinking of.
Yep.
But yeah, okay, we need Cheetah or Cersei. We can get them in there. But
now, what did you guys think of Steve Trevor coming back, how they did that? Because one of the things I thought was weird was them bringing Steve back in somebody else's body instead of just having him be manifested as himself. What did you guys think of that?
It made me uncomfortable.
Yeah, it felt unnecessary. Like we talked about with this Wishstone, the only rules are the ones that the writers are making for it. And so why? Why make that choice? That's the thing I didn't understand. It was like, fine. I mean, I guess if you have to have it be a different body, sure. But why? You don't have to do that.
I thought to myself, okay, they should have made it clear that Diana wished that she could meet a guy like Steve Trevor, right? And then that would have fit. Like, you know, it's a guy, but it's really Steve Trevor that's another guy, played by her real life husband, I guess. It just seemed really weird that it was that he was embodying another person. Like, what happened to that guy? And like, Diana didn't even seem to care at all. this is taking over this guy's body, this innocent guy's body, and she doesn't really, that doesn't bother her at all. And that was almost creepy.
It was very strange. As someone who, I don't watch trailers, and I try to avoid as much information as I can. So I didn't even know that Steve Trevor was going to be in this movie at all. So I was surprised when Chris Pine's name popped up in the opening credits. Like, okay, I guess he's coming back. And yeah, there's other ways they could have done it. Cletus, that's a great point, that since we're just making magic wishes come true, there's no need for him to, he could just pop out of thin air and okay, you know, poof, here he is. They didn't need to quantum leap him, you know, so where we're seeing Chris Payne like the way we used to see Scott Bakula, but it's actually a whole different dude. That was a very strange way to go.
Cletus, do you even know what quantum leap is?
No.
I knew it. I knew you were too young.
That hurts me. That hurts me.
That's great.
Kevin, I just gotta say, the fact that you didn't know Chris Pine was in the movie is shockingly impressive. Well done, man.
I do a really good job not knowing anything about any of these movies. I heard that Kristen Wiig was playing Cheetah, so that somehow did get through to me, but I didn't know Max Lord was in it, let alone that it was Pedro Pascal. I did not know that Chris Pine was coming back, so yeah, that was all news to me. All I knew was it's in 1984 and Kristen Wiig is the Cheetah. That's all I knew going in.
Wow.
Like, I stay on TikTok a lot, so the fact that, like, I didn't have anything else spoiled for me, because let me tell you, there are so many Pedro Pascal thirst videos on there. Oh my God.
Yeah, I mean, and you guys know this from when I've been on DCU before, but I'm just so hyper paranoid about spoilers, and they show you too much in the trailers. They really do. Yes. There's so many trailers, they just show you the whole movie because they're so terrified that people aren't going to see the movie. So I was like, no, it's good. Here it is. Here's the whole movie. See, it's good. And so I feel like, you know, I'm a DC guy. If they make a Wonder Woman movie, I'm going to go see it. You don't have to sell it to me in a trailer. And so why would I watch the trailer?
That's a great point. I was so mad when I think it was like the second or third trailer actually showed Cheetah, actually Cheetah, because my girlfriend obviously loved the first movie, doesn't know the Wonder Woman comics at all, but was very excited for this one, was interested to see that Kristen Wiig was in it, but didn't know who she was. And so I was really excited to see her be surprised by that. And then the trailer gave it away. I was like, yeah.
You should have told her that they accidentally spliced in some footage from that Cats musical movie.
Oh, yeah. Oh, that was just Taylor Swift. That's just Taylor Swift. Don't worry about it.
That was Taylor.
Attention, people of Earth. Looking for a way to kill half an hour every week?
Try the Flopcast. It's a silly podcast about cartoons, music, comics, movies, obscure pop culture from the 70s and 80s, and chickens.
Join us. Bring coffee.
We're on the ESO Network.
And we're at flopcast.net.
Hey, how about Simon Stagg?
That was great. What a great little Easter egg there. That was awesome.
Yeah.
That was exciting for me. And I guess that's not going to go anywhere, right? That's most likely just a little Easter egg treat for DC nerds like us. You know, I can't imagine that's leading to Metamorpho stuff, I would think, especially not like if they move up to present day, then Simon Stagg would be like 100 years old.
That's twice that Geoff Johns has done something like that with him, because they did that on The Flash too, in like episode 2, I think.
Yeah.
Would I forgot about
just
that.
Give Metamorpho all these teases. Right? They've still never done Metamorpho in any of the TV shows or anything, right? The cartoons they have, but in live action, no, I don't think they've ever gotten.
He has a special effect that they still can't afford on a video basis.
Yeah.
Now, what do you guys think about Wonder Woman flying? Because we've seen it in the comics before where she hasn't flown and where she has flown. And it was interesting how they did it in the movie, because it was like she could partially fly but couldn't. It was kind of weird. Plus her swinging through the clouds and off lightning. Little far-fetched, if you ask me.
She was gliding. We found out that Wonder Woman's bones are actually like that of a bird. So I feel like she was more gliding than flying. Like, well, that's how it made me feel the second thing. Yeah.
That is like in the Bronze Age, at least, maybe the Silver Age too, but that was, they would always say, oh no, she can't fly, but she rides on air currents. She rides the wind.
Yep.
She's like Christopher Cross, rides like the wind, you know? that was always... That was the explanation that they gave back then. So they were sort of doing that in this movie. But yeah, at the same time, they were also doing, also she can grab lightning bolts with the lasso, and she can swing the lasso around like Thor's hammer to burst ahead with it. So that they got a little crazy with the lasso effects overall throughout the movie, I think.
I thought the movie couldn't quite make up its mind if she could fly or not, to be honest with you, because at one, like you said, at one point she's basically just swinging from lightning bolt to lightning bolt or whatever. And then she's doing Thor's hammer with her lasso. But then at other point, she just does like the Superman fist ahead.
Oh, yeah. It was Chris Reeve fist out.
Yeah. So it felt like the movie itself was like, I don't know if she can fly or not. You decide. I personally was very confused that by the, like, in terms of her ability to fly coming out of the movie. It's like, I don't know. Can she fly? I'm not sure.
And then also the continuity gets weird because, and I have not seen the Justice League movie since it first came out, so I don't remember, but did she fly in Justice League?
Oh,
and if not, remember. Did she forget how to fly in the intervening 40 years?
I can't remember.
I just watched Batman v Superman, and I think she doesn't really fly, but she does leap pretty high. Like she can leap tall buildings or whatever, but I don't think she outright flies in that one.
We saw her leaping in the first movie, so yeah. We knew she could do that.
Yeah. Oh yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah. It's something that's never been consistent in the character over her entire existence. Right. There have been times where she just did not fly at all. Then there's ride like the wind, and then there's just outright flying. Like even in the Justice League Unlimited cartoon series, as I recall, she was just flying around just like Superman.
Yeah, I will say, so I haven't seen a movie on the big screen in the theater since Suicide Squad, not Suicide Squad, since Birds of Prey.
Birds of Prey. Yeah, yeah, me too.
And I've seen many movies through Netflix and other streaming services, during this whole time. This is the first time that I watched a movie and I thought, damn, I bet this is better on the big screen. And that scene in particular, where she's in the clouds and she's sort of learning to fly, quote unquote, or work with it or whatever. I thought to myself, on the big screen, this is just so beautiful and immense. And I'm watching it on, I have a decent sized screen, but it's not near enough what it should be. Cause that should be like a majestic, like, Superman, Christopher Reeve moment. Right. Like,
yeah.
And instead it's just sort of like, it was reduced to, that small time. There was a couple of other times during this movie too, the fight scene in the mall and some of the stuff later on where I thought, man, this, Patty is making this for the big screen. She's making this movie for the big screen. And it's the first time this year that I thought to myself, man, I wish I was watching this on the big screen.
Yeah, absolutely. It would have been way better, way more breathtaking in an actual theater.
One thing I wanted to talk about briefly also with the flight scene, and it wasn't something that honestly actually occurred to me while I was watching it, but my girlfriend raised this point, and that she was confused plot-wise what she was doing. Obviously, she's learning how to fly or sort of fly or whatever, lasso lightning, but she thought, watching the movie, that she was in pursuit of the helicopter, but then she's not, because we learn that ultimately she's going back to get the armor, which makes sense. That part makes sense, but she's in the air a long time and then gets the armor. And then my girlfriend raised the point, if that's the case, how the hell does she know where to go after that? And it hadn't really occurred to me, because I was kind of watching, and after she raised it, I was like, oh, yeah. Yeah, that doesn't really make sense, does it?
I don't even know if it made sense for her to go back. I was kind of wondering, like, why did you go back and get the armor? Your strength is back now. Like, what are you what are you afraid of that you need the armor for? I didn't really understand why she went back for the armor.
And
I mean, it looked cool, but
this is another thing. The only reason I say this is because, as somebody who's tragically excited for the Green Lantern movie, there are bits in that movie that don't make sense because there was supposed to be a different thing happening in the story and they didn't take it out. Like the Lanterns randomly saving Rai-Rai from the sun at the end. They're only there because they were supposed to be a part of that fight originally. Anyway, going back to this, I wonder if she was originally not supposed to have her powers back and was going to use the suit to fight Cheetah. And then at some point they decided, nah, that doesn't make sense. Let's give her powers back. But then they kept the suit anyway. That's kind of what it felt like to me.
I mean, the suit was the poster child of, like, the movie. That's the first thing we saw with a poster for it, so. Yep.
And it's gorgeous. I mean, it looks cool. Visually, it looks great. And I like the way she fought with it as well, because you notice that she fought pretty defensively with it. And I like the fact that throughout all this, Diana's fighting style is still primarily defensive, making sure that minimal pain is involved with her. And the end result, like the end, the final confrontation is not through fists, it's through a conversation. And so that sort of thing is definitely in line with what I want and expect from a Wonder Woman movie.
I have to agree with you, Mike. Her fighting style throughout the movie was defensive. And I like, even in the beginning sequences where she's kicking the car out of the way, you know, she's not really trying to harm people. And I liked how they portrayed her fighting style throughout the movie. And it was kind of fun with the kids, her winking at them and stuff like that too. I did enjoy that. She felt more hopeful in the movie than some of the other DC movies we've seen.
This wasn't a dark, dismal DC movie. What?
Although, you know, I got to say that overall with DC movies, we've really gotten away from that, right? With between the two Wonder Woman movies and Aquaman and Shazam and Birds of Prey. Yeah.
Thankfully. Because I think that's what most people were like, why do they have to be so dark?
Absolutely. Oh, yeah.
It's like, no one wants to be around Bruce Wayne if he's always just dark and moody. Bruce Wayne is supposed to be the opposite of Batman at times. So he's the playboy.
Yep. And for, you know, everything else that, you know, I may have to say about the movie, Gal is still owning the character. I still like, yeah, it's still fun to watch her play this character because she's just so good at it.
Oh, when she's on screen, you just stare at her, not just because, okay, here's a beautiful woman, but she looks perfect in that part, whether in Diana or fully suited up Wonder Woman. Yeah, she just owns the screen in this part.
Yeah, she really has a presence about her.
And that's saying something in a movie where Linda Carter makes an appearance also. Right? Come on.
I was very surprised because I wasn't expecting an after credit scene. But when the credits start rolling, I let it go. And then that scene popped up. I was like, oh, we're getting another scene? And I was not expecting Linda. I had heard nothing about Linda Carter being in this. And I was so happy.
Yeah, her crashing the San Diego Comic-Con panel makes so much more sense now.
I remember being surprised that we didn't get a Linda cameo in the first movie.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, because she was around, she was making appearances with Gal during the promotion for that movie. So, you know, I was surprised that she wasn't on board then. As I rewatched the movie today, when they tell the story of Asteria wearing the armor, There is a flash of like a close up where you see her eyes, mm-hmm. And is that Linda? I couldn't quite tell, but you see blue eyes.
I think it is.
Yeah. So, you know, obviously unrecognizable just seeing the little tiny, you know, hunk of her face in that shot. But it was in retrospect, knowing that that was her this time, I was really looking at that scene like, oh, is that her?
Well, and also it has like an actual, like, it's like passing the mantle. They're showing this character that's like saved Wonder Woman's tribe of Amazons, and then later on we see Wonder Woman wearing that armor again, so it kind of gives you that like nostalgic passing the armor on feel. I don't know, maybe I'm just reading into it too much.
Well, I could tell
you
that
any chance for the third movie, could we possibly get Linda in that armor?
That would be
awesome.
I mean,
they announced the third movie already, so
yeah.
The reason why Linda wasn't in the first movie, because they wanted to have her in it. I guess it was a scheduling conflict. She had a scheduling conflict where she was busy and couldn't get to where they were filming. That's why she wasn't in the first movie.
She's too busy being the mayor on Supergirl.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The president.
Oh, the president. Sorry. Yeah, you're right.
Yeah. She was the president. That's always good to see her.
Oh, sure.
Fitting that she's in a movie, you know, with Wonder Woman set in the 80s.
Any last thoughts on the movie before we wrap this up?
Go watch it if you haven't. Don't listen to what the other haters are saying.
A lot of haters.
Oh my gosh, so many. so that, many.
That I mean, you know, it's the internet and it's 2020, so you know, you kind of expect it. But man, I mean, I've seen people out there calling this like the worst superhero movie ever. I mean, more than one people, and I'm like, not even by a long shot. Like that. So
just make your own opinion. Go watch it on your own. Make your own opinion. Don't listen to other people.
Absolutely. It's
understand that it is a comic movie set during the 80s. It's not supposed to be the next like Scarlet Letter or something. It's literally just a comic movie set during the 80s. Think about how cheesy 80s comics are and then go from there.
It's a lot of fun. And yes. I'm, you know, is it as good as the first one? Maybe not. But you know, it's still pretty cool. So I had a lot of fun watching.
First one had to prove itself. So
yeah, that was lightning striking, and you can't expect lightning to strike all the time. And so this one I think was pretty solid. I still feel confident having all these people involved with the third one.
Yeah, I mean this one for me, it's not as good as the first one and kind of clunky. And as we've discussed, you know, for the past hour, some storytelling miscues perhaps. And it was a complicated juggling act that they did not always succeed in. I think a piece kind of fell off to the side here and there. It didn't quite work. But overall, fun. It's beautiful. Absolutely worth seeing. And still would have to rate way above many, many other superhero movies. Come on.
Me, I really enjoyed watching it. Besides some of the problems I had with the plot, I mean, I really liked it overall. And some of the scenes in there I really liked. So I would probably give it an 8 out of 10 if I was rating it.
For me, I thought the movie was really entertaining, and ultimately that's really all I wanted. I wanted a fun, entertaining movie to watch on Christmas, and I got that. Like you guys said, like it was not pretending to be an Oscar-contending film, so I don't understand. But like you guys said, the level of criticism has gotten is surprising just in that, like, come on. Like, have we seen Catwoman? Have we seen some of these other...
This movie was supposed to save 2020.
It's a good, entertaining film. There are much more plot holes in this than there were in the first one. And I think part of that is because I thought the setting of the first film forced the focus a little bit better, in addition to other things. But that being said, it's still... I wanted to be entertained, and I was entertained. I wanted to see Wonder Woman be... you know, a kick-ass superhero, and that's exactly what she is in the movie. I don't know. I got what I wanted out of it. I don't know that it's as good as the first film, but that's okay. Like, it could still be a fun movie and not be as good as the first one.
Yep.
I will say, this might be a hot take, Drew, and I'm curious your opinion on this. I'm more and more convinced, I don't think I like Geoff Johns as a screenwriter. I'm just throwing that out there. I like the guy a lot as a comic book writer. That might be a hot take, but I think the guy's maybe better suited to writing comics.
You know what? I was thinking about that the other day, too. I was like, you know, he does a lot better job doing comics than he does screenwriting. So I have to agree with you on that. That actually popped into my mind the other day. So
I think he just should just stick to Stargirl.
Yeah, which might be what he's doing in the future,
because that's really awesome, and he's doing a great job on that writing and doing all the producing on that one. And stick to that.
Well, guess what? He's gonna be. He's our him and Patty Jenkins have already been writing Wonder Woman 3. I read so. he's gonna be involved in it.
I need to send Patty Greg Rucka's number. Because I think that would solve all the problems right there.
All right. Well, that wraps up another episode. Do you have a shout-out, Angela?
You can listen to me every week on A Geek Girl's Take. And, yeah, that's really all I can think about.
All right. And what's your shout-out, Mike?
Well, you can find me on the Earth Station One podcast. Angela's on that as well every week, and it's great talking to you actually in a segment like this. I really appreciate it. We don't do that often enough. And if you want to see my books and find out all the other nonsense I'm up to, just go to newlegendmike.com. So thanks again for inviting me. It's always fun to be on this part of the station.
No problem. We always enjoy having you. All right, do you have a shout out, Kevin?
Well, yeah, I am also part of the ESO Network, just like everybody else on the show tonight. My show is called The Flopcast, and it's just a ridiculous, silly, geeky, weird show every week. We're at flopcast.net, and we're here on ESO, and I've also been popping up fairly regularly on the Dragon Con Classics track quarantine panels. So if you follow the Dragon Con American Sci-Fi Classics track, they've been doing a really fun weekly convention style panels, but online on YouTube. So check those out also, because no Dragon Con this year, and that's usually where I see Mike and where I see Angela and so many friends every year. So it's great that we can do these online hangouts like this instead.
All right, Cletus, what's your shout out this week?
Well, since I've already made a number of references in a previous podcast to the Max Lord era that we've talked about, where he kind of becomes a Wonder Woman villain, I wanted to instead highlight Barbara Minerva's, specifically her origins. She first pops up post-Crisis in Wonder Woman Volume 2, Number 7, and then first becomes Cheetah, at least on screen, so to speak, like actually physically seeing her as Cheetah in issue number 9, a couple issues later.
All right, and for my shout-out, I guess I'm going to shout-out to my wife this week because I gave her a Wonder Woman Christmas. I got her this... she got a lot of Wonder Woman stuff. One of the favorite things I got her was this Joel Jones statue of Wonder Woman. That thing's freaking awesome. I love it.
It looks so cool.
Oh, you saw a picture of it online?
I saw the picture you posted online. It looks really cool.
So I got her that thing. That was really cool. I got her a Wonder Woman wallet. I got her a mug. I got her a Wonder Woman magazine about the movie. What else did I get her? I got her a Wonder Woman tumbler cup with her name engraved on it. That was pretty cool too. So she got all this. I got her Wonder Woman magnet for her stocking, and just, I just made it a Wonder Woman Christmas, and it was great that the movie came out that day. So it worked out great. It was a fun Christmas.
That's terrific. Nicely done, awesome. Drew.
All right. Well, if you'd like to comment on anything we've talked about tonight, you can reach us at our feedback line, 317-564-9133. Leave us a message, or you can email us at earthstationdcu@gmail.com. All right, coming up next week, we'll be talking Action Comics, Detective Comics, Wonder Woman, Dark Knight's Death Metal, The Secret Origin number 1, Batman, White Knight Presents Harley Quinn number 3, Justice League Dark, and Black Adam Endless Winter Special number 1. Thanks for joining us, and we'll see you next time.
Wonder Woman! Wonder Woman!
All the world is waiting for you, and the power you possess. In your satin tights, fighting for your rights, and the old red, white, and blue.
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network. Be part of the crew and help support our shows by donating to our ESO Patreon or by shopping for the TeePublic store, which can all be found at www.esonetwork.com. The ESO Network, your station for all things geek.